Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vatitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Samasteshu vastu shvanusyuttamekam. Samastani vastu niyam nasprashanti. Samastani vastu niyam nasprashanti. Viyat vatsada shuddham achaswarupaha. Viyat vatsada shuddham achaswarupaha. Sanityopalabdhi swarupo hamatma. Sandeep. Samasteshu vastushu anusyutam ekam. Samastani vastuni yam na sprashanti. Vyadvat sada shuddham acha swarupaha sanitya upalabdhi swarupaha aham atma. Okay. Again, the same fourth line of Hastamalika telling Shankara who he is. Right? Aham Atma, Aham Sa Atma, I am that Atma, whose Swarupa, whose nature is Nitya Upalabdhi. I am the Self, whose nature, whose Swarupa, whose nature is Nitya Upalabdhi, is consciousness, Upalabdhi, consciousness which is Nitya, free from time, free from past, present, or future. I am that consciousness whose being is always the same. I am the conscious being that never comes, never goes. It's not subject to time. It's the conscious being that is present at this moment, this conscious being that I am, is present at all moments. If I go back in reference to the creation, if I go back a million years, I am the one present, illumining that period of time. If I were to go project forward a million years, I am that one who is present, illumining that, right? The consciousness which is the presence, free from past, present, and future, so always the same. Nitya means free from any change, timeless. The Nitya is not eternal. It's not that we can't use the word eternal, but eternal is usually in reference to something goes on forever, like the mountains are eternal, something like that. This is not eternal in the terms of going on forever, but in the terms of changeless presence, that which is. So I am, and this amness, this being that I am, doesn't come and go. This being that I am isn't subject to modification. That's the Nitya Upalabdhi Swarupa. Swarupa means my own nature. So I am that Self whose nature is Nitya Upalabdhi, changeless consciousness. And it says, that changeless consciousness, who is samasteshu, going to the top line now, samasteshu vastushu. Vastu, right? The word vastu literally means a thing. So everything here, this is a thing. So if I say, samasta vastu. Samasta means all things without any remainder. So anything that can be used in this kind of nominal word thing. So samasteshu vastushu. All things in all things. That which is anusyutam ekam. This nitya upalabdhi swarupa, this self, pure consciousness. I have to learn how to turn that off, sorry. It's announcing. Anytime anybody comes on, I make that announcement. Yes. And if someone else is entered the room. Right? Yes. What? So anyway, this nitya upalabdhi, this the conscious being that I am, which is one, is something which is anusyutam, is pervasive, pervades through all things. Now this word anusyutam, another word that we use is vyaptam, means it's all pervasive. But we have to understand what the word anusyutam or vyaptam means. For now we'll use all pervasive, or that which pervades all things. So I am that conscious being, right, which is one, which is ekam, which pervades all things, like space, as we'll see. Let me do the whole verse, and then I'll get into the subtleties of this. So I'm that nitya upalabdhi swarupa, which is ekam, one, which is anusyutam, that which pervades samasteshu vasteshu eshu rameshu, right? Locative plural. Samasteshu adjective vastushu. So in all the things, that which is pervading, which is one, ekam is neuter. So ekam vastushu. Ekam. Samastani vastuni, all things. Nominative plural. Samastani vastuni. Palam pale palani. Samastani vastuni, all things, yam, which, na sprashanti, third person plural, na sprashanti, those all things, which, yam, which, all things, do not touch. Na sprashanti, do not touch. I am that one timeless consciousness which pervades all things, which all things do not touch. Okay? Yeah, let me do the whole verse and then I'll get into it. Vyedvat, like space. Right? I pervade all things like space. Like space, I am one, I as one, pervade all things. And I am that one which all these things which I pervade do not touch. Okay? Nesprashanti. Vyedvat. Vyet means space. And you have vat as an indeclinable. On the end of the word, it means like. So vyet. Vat, so like space, sada, always shuddham. Shuddham means pure. By pure, he means nirmalam. Malam means like dirt or impurity. Nir, without. Shuddham, so pure. Nirmalam, without any impurity. What does that mean? Ragadi dosha rahitam. Without the doshas, the defects of raga and dvesha, etc. Raga means your likes. Dvesha, your hatreds, your likes and your dislikes, your jealousies, all of the things that can go on with the mind. So I am one who is free from shuddham, free from all of these impurities such as likes and dislikes, etc. Ragadi, right? Ragadi dosha. Rahitam means without. Without all of these things. And I am echa swarupam. Now, the word echa also means pure. So it says shuddham, which means pure. Acha also means pure. So they've got two pures right side by side. They, well, what does this pure mean and what does this pure mean? So in how Shankara does this in the Bhasha, he says the first shuddha, like antakarani shuddhi, right, you've heard this, antakarani shuddhi, purity of mind, that's shuddha. So he's looking at pure, the first shuddha, in terms of antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, right? Free from likes and dislikes, etc. The second, acha, this word translates as purity, but it also translates as that which is absolutely clear, absolutely translucent. So this acha, he says for that, amrita rupam, that which is amrita, free from death. So that which is pure means not bound by any form, not bound by change, right? So that's how he takes that. Acha as being amrita rupa. Amrita means free from death, which would mean free from any type of form or anything that's subject to time. So he says, sada shuddham, free from all impurities like likes, dislikes, acha swarupam, the one who is completely free from death. So I am that atma, whose nature, I am that self, whose nature is consciousness, which is timeless. The one that pervades all things, samaste vastushu, but which all things do not touch, just like space. always pure, free from change, free from death. That's the verse. This word vastu, right? Vastu means a thing, right? Oh, okay. Vastu means a thing. If you say samasta vastu, it means all things, and so we can keep the word as thing. But in Vedanta, this word vastu really means Brahman, right? And because in the end, there is no thing to be found here. And this is why I'm going into this now, is because of this word anusyutam. Because the word anusyutam, which we say that which pervades, it also means that which pervades like the warp and woof of something. That which pervades like the very being of something is anusyutam. And so here, in terms of our experience of this creation, right? I am that self, the conscious being, the timeless consciousness, which pervades all things, right? So how do I pervade all things? He says, well, like space, I pervade all things. But that's not, we can't stop there, right? Because it is true that space pervades all things. Like all of these objects exist within space. And space pervades all things, and space is not touched by anything that it pervades. In other words, you can't wet space, or you can't burn space. Or you can't do anything to space, right? You can't make space dirty. And so even though space is pervading all things, it's more subtle. Right? It's more subtle, right? And so because it's more subtle, nothing can touch it. And so in spite of being all pervasive, it remains pure. It remains in its own form, right? Whereas say if you spilt some, put some mud into some water, right? The water and the mud are going to mix together, so one can sully the other. But with space, because space is more subtle than all of the objects exist in space, so space is pervasive to all of the objects. However, all of the objects can't touch the space which pervades them. And space is in and through all of the objects. That's why you can say space is just one. Like if I take a clay pot, for instance, and I move it from point A to point B, it's not moving the space. I say, is the pot space moving from point A to point B? No. Right? The pot is moving through the space. So there's not two spaces here, even though we can say that all of these objects act as upadis or conditioning adjuncts to space to make them appear as differentiated. Like I can say, this is a cup space and this is room space. And this is Berkeley space, you know. But actually, the space is pervasive to the cup, pervasive to the room, pervasive to Berkeley, pervasive to the United States, pervasive to the Earth, pervasive to the galaxy. In other words, there's nothing that in reality is chopping up the space. So that's when we say the space pervades all objects, itself not being touched by any object. Now, here, I pervade all objects like space. Okay, so that's where we're going with this initially. I pervade all objects like space. Like space pervades all objects, I pervade all objects like space. Because, in fact, even space itself is an object of my awareness. Right? Actually, this is really a beautiful thing to understand. Just on this level, we have to take it a little deeper than this, but just on this level, space pervades all of these objects. All of these objects exist in space, right? And space is something which itself exists in your awareness, right? So you, in fact, pervade the space. Now, look at it like this. Space pervades this room. And space is something that goes from here, the end of this room, all the way through. If we just take this room as an upadi for the space, space is pervading the entire room. All right, so I can say, if I use my same example that everybody's sick of, I'm sure, but anyway. Yeah, using just space. If I say, you know, the painting is 10 feet from 12 feet from my body, right? That's true. But how far is space from my body? And how far is space from the painting? Or how far is space from the rug? How far is space from you? The space is pervasive. From the standpoint of space, there is no distance because everything exists within space. And yet, the objects, and yet with space, there's dimension, right? So here we can recognize there's one space that's all pervasive and not touched by the objects, but we also see that all of these objects exist within space, and therefore there's dimension. Everybody see that? Like you're on this side, and you're on this side, and you're on this side. So space is something that pervades and creates dimension, in fact. Okay? But now, in terms of your experience, all of this room, including the space, exists in your awareness. True? And so what that means is, not only are you aware of the space, right, you're also aware of all of the objects in space. So space is pervasive to this room and more subtle. But you are aware even of the space, which is pervasive to this room, along with all of the objects in the room. So now think of it like this. Say your mind is not, your consciousness is not more pervasive than the space. Then you'll hit a brick wall. Right? You'll hit a brick wall. But instead, absolutely everything, including the space, exists within your consciousness, right? So, in fact, even now, what's important here is to just settle into your experience. Even experientially, there is nothing here in your experience, just like you can clearly say, and you have the direct, immediate experience that, yes, everything is in space. You know that because you can perceive it, right? You can cognize it. You have a cognition of space and of dimension, okay? Now also, what about the cognition or the recognition that this whole room, right, just as space pervades this whole room, there is nothing in this entire room that is away from awareness? Can you recognize that fact? When we think of awareness, we think of awareness in terms of the body and the sense organs and the mind usually. And so what you have to do to really see this experientially, but rather to recognize the truth of it or to recognize the experience of this. This is something that's here to be experienced. It's a matter of recognizing the experience of it. The way to do that really is to look at it like this. First of all, if I say that everything that I perceive in this room is in space, that's clear. But that means that not only are all of you in space, this body, which is also perceived, is in space, and this chair. And so this whole entity. So now in your perception right now, you have to include the entirety of your perception, which includes your body. It includes the whole room. Your same sense organs that are aware of all of you, the same five sense organs are aware of your own physical body also. And so now you're included in this perception. Everybody clear on that? Now, just to understand, you're also very clear that this perception, you're actually having a thought modification of this room right now. Right? Just imagine here, your sense organs are open, your eyes are open, your ears are open, right? And your mind is focused using your eyes. And so therefore, you now have a thought, a vritti, a thought modification of the room. If your mind was daydreaming, right, if thinking about this or that, you wouldn't be having a thought modification of the room. You'd be with your daydream, right? So As long as your sense organs are open, you are having a thought modification of this room. And included in that thought modification is your physical body. Right? Whatever you perceive through your eyes, through your ears, through your sense of taste, through your sense of touch, through your sense of smell, is included in this thought modification. So your body is known just like the rest of the objects in the room are known. If you don't believe it, then just get rid of one thought, one sense organ at a time. If you don't have any eyes, you know, if you shut your eyes, you don't see your body either. If you're deaf, you don't hear your body and you don't hear anything else. You lose your sense of touch, you don't feel anything, including your body. So now, this entire thought modification is in my awareness. Is that clear? That means that this wall is known. It's in my consciousness. That wall is known, that is known, that is known, that is known, this is known. Everything is known. So that means the awareness, my being, because it's not somebody else's awareness, right, is anusyutam. The one awareness that I am, right? I am one awareness. I'm not two awarenesses, I'm one awareness. I'm just talking about you now. One awareness, not two awarenesses. This one awareness, me, is anusyutam, means it is vyaptam, it pervades, it's pervasive to absolutely everything in this thought modification. Right? How many awarenesses am I? One awareness. How many vrittis or thought modifications I can have? Countless. Now, I'm just talking about this one that I have of the room. In this one thought modification of the room, I illumine the entire thought modification, so the whole thing is known. Right? So now, in reference to the thought modification, I pervade it. Just like space pervades the atmosphere, the space pervades the room, I, the conscious being, pervade the whole thought modification, which includes space, because I'm aware of space. And so I, who am one, am pervasive to the whole thought modification. Right? That's how we can use the word pervasive. And because of that, every single thing in that thought modification is known. So I can even expand that a little bit to say the thought modification that's taking place through my sense organs, right, plus any emotions or feelings that might be going on through the mind, what we can say like this: whatever is occurring in my mind at this moment, on every conceivable dimension, physical, feeling the physical body, any emotions or thoughts or daydreams or multi-processing that could be going on, right, every single piece of that or part of that is pervaded by consciousness, because the entirety of it is known. So every part of it, in fact, is pervaded by one consciousness, by me, by my being, the consciousness which I am. So that I can say, I am aware of this, or this thought modification, this set of experiences, in its entirety, is known to me. I am anusyutam. I pervade the whole thing. Because this is known, 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 inner emotions are known, the whole is known. Right? I illumine it. And I am one. And the one who illumines it, the one who pervades it, right, is not touched by it. That's why, just in known terms of the vritti, the thought, that's why the whole thought can go or change. Lots of activity can be going on in that thought. Lots of different feelings and emotions, all kinds of stuff can be going on. And I just remain illumining it. And then that vritti, in fact, can be replaced by another one, you know, like by another one with a different set of feelings or a different set of perceptual data. Like, for instance, if I look over here, I have a whole different view, a whole different experience over here. If I look over here, I have a whole different experience. But the consciousness that illumines that, right, remains the same. I'm not dragging. You have to get so simple. It's just, I mean, just get down to absolute simplicity. If I look here, and I look over here, I'm not dragging this with me. Right? If I look here, I'm now having a thought modification of all of this. I illumine this thought. Just through my sense organs. I now have a thought modification of this. I pervade it. The whole thing exists in my awareness. If I move over here, now I have a thought modification of this. I pervade it. The whole thing exists in my awareness. Nothing is away from knownness. But when I move from here to here, I'm not taking anything with me. The only thing that remains constant is the consciousness, which is untouched. Now, this is still obvious in terms of, I mean, we don't really even bother to think about these things. They're so obvious, right? But this is true on all levels of experience. Emotional levels, you know. Thought life, emotional life, imaginative life, perceptual life. There is one conscious being, that is one only, that is pervasive always to the entirety of the experience, you know. And then there's the experience, the samasta, you know, the samasta vastus, all of the vastus, all of the things, whether subtle or gross. I am present to all of those things, that's why they are always known, but none of them ever touch me in any way. And so I am the constant, you know, conscious being that is untouched by all experience. Now that's looking at it just from the standpoint of my being in reference to the thought. Okay? But they've used, Hasdam Malika has used this word vastu. And we've used samasta vastu, all of these things, right? All of these things exist in my awareness. One other more thing about that. If I include my body and my mind and my sense organs and all of my moods and my emotions, if I recognize that those, all of it, what I usually take to be the jiva, the individual that makes me a person, if I realize that all of this person, this individuality, is actually part of the perception, you know, like the painting, like the rug, like you, this body, mind, sense organs are also part of the perception. They're also objects. They're vastus, right? If I realize that, if I put the whole, everything that's perceived into the pot, into the creation, then I, the conscious being, am really only one. Like, because now I am not identified. My being is not identified with all of these objects that I illumine. So usually I only think of the objects I illumine as these things out here, or emotions or thoughts, but I still maintain an identity with this object, or the object of my mind as a jiva. But actually, everything that I normally identify my being, what makes me me, I identify as my being to be one of these objects. But actually, all of these objects, body, mind, sense organs, all are part of the vritti, they're thought modification, they're all known. And so I am the one conscious being that illumines all of them. That means I'm not the body. My being is not the body. It's not the sense organs. It's not the mind. It's not the emotions. It's not the thought. It's not the thoughts. That's what we mean by nitya upalabdhi. So Hasdam Malika says, I am the self that never changes. I am the conscious being that illumines all things. The conscious being that illumines all things, who's never touched by, can never be touched by those things. Just like space, I remain always pure, right? Always pure, always untouched, free from death. That is my being, okay? Now, that's all very clear, even the use of the example of space, how I pervade the whole vritti in terms of space, I pervade the whole. The word vastu, the The word vastu is a word that we use in Vedanta to take all of these things back to the one vastu, right? Thing. What is a thing? We say there are many things here. Oh yes, everything can just I illumine the whole vritti, you know. But this how can this consciousness be pervasive to all of this? What does that mean? If I'm talking about consciousness pervasive to the vritti, you know, but what does it mean when we use the word anusyutam, that which pervades all of these objects that I see in the creation? Now the word anusyutam is going to be used a little bit differently. It does mean pervasive, but it means pervasive like warp and woof, where the consciousness is the very being. It is the very substance of all of this. Conscious being is not away from any of this. And so to get to that layer, we look at exactly what is the nature of all of these vastus, right, that we experience here, that don't touch the consciousness in any way. Right? What could those? What? How could that be? And so then there's that unfoldment that has to do with recognizing the reality of this creation itself that we experience. Can we say, like right now, we say, all right, everything in the thought modification is pervaded by my consciousness. The one consciousness, I illumine it all. Okay. Can I now say that all of this which I illumine, okay, is nothing but me? There's a jump there, right? Right now, we're saying that consciousness, the one consciousness, illumines, right, this mind, right, which is a thought modification of everything, including the body, mind, sense organs. So it illumines completely the whole thing. There's nothing away from consciousness. And so my consciousness, in fact, can't be in the form of all of these things that can be objectified. But now, what about all of these things, which I can't be, which are objectified? Do all of these things, what is the relationship of consciousness to all of these things? Because consciousness pervades all of these things. Consciousness, which is one, pervades all of these things in the form of anusyutam, like the warp and woof, pervades all of these things as its very essential being. Okay. And so now, what does that mean? I have to look at these objects themselves. This body is an object. This rug is an object. Painting is an object. The space is an object. I'm not even talking now about being aware of them. That's when I'm aware of them. Then I'm talking about the vritti, right? But what about the actual thing? Can I say that I am the rug? That this rug is nothing but consciousness. You know? This painting is nothing but consciousness. This space is nothing but consciousness. Its very being is consciousness. Very being is a consciousness, which never changes. It's not just that it's consciousness. It's consciousness which is never changed or never touched by anything, by any object. Consciousness is its very being, absolutely pervasive to it. There's nothing away from consciousness. All of these things now, and not just vritti, all of these things, but all of these things are nothing but consciousness, but they never touch consciousness. Consciousness is nitya. It's timeless. Right? It's free from change. All of these things are time-bound. And they're continually changing, right? They're coming into being and going out of being. So now if we say all of these things are nothing but consciousness, and consciousness never changes, who is that? Yeah. How do we establish that? And what is the experience of that? Yeah. What is the experience of that? You can never have an experience away from yourself, which is consciousness, and your vritti, the thought modification. The thought modification that you have limits your experience. So the self-experience is always there. The vritti is always there. And so there, just within the confines of your consciousness and the thought modification that you have, there's a lot to understand, right? Because you can experience just within the confines of the conscious being that you are and whatever vritti that you happen to have, there's a relationship there between consciousness and the vritti. That's just what I've been going through now. Okay? And you can't get away from that experience. Even if you were to have some sort of an upasana experience, some experience of the creation or a spiritual experience or experience of another loka or something, that is still going to be dependent on a vritti. Everybody see that? You can't get away from the vritti. So your experience is going to be confined to that. But now, accepting that, we can make a distinction here. I am having the consciousness has a relationship to the vritti, which I recognize, that is the vritti is that through which I know all of this. But knowing all of this, I can ask, what is the reality of these things? Not the reality of the vritti, the thought modification, but what is the reality of the things that I'm having a thought modification of? Okay? Let me make it clear again because I saw some quizzical looks. If I'm looking at all of you right now, I know that through my eyes, my mind is forming a vritti, right, of the room, and you are all included in that thought modification, as well as this body, mind, sense organs. And so I can understand now, I can really analyze the interior reality of the fact that the conscious being, consciousness, is changeless and pervasive to that thought modification, which is a thought modification of whatever is in the room. Okay? And so now, in terms of this vritti, which is the thought modification of whatever is in the room, I recognize that awareness is stable and changeless and equal throughout the vritti. Right? The awareness of the right side is in of the vritti is in consciousness, the left side, the top, the bottom, the whole thing is equally in consciousness, equally pervaded. And as the vrittis change, consciousness remains. So in terms of my experience, I can understand that. But now we have to apply some logic toward what we say is external to the vritti. In other words, I have a vritti of this object. What is the reality of this object that I'm having a vritti of? Right? Because even though the vritti, I know it through I know the object through the vritti, through the thought modification, still that object is there. Is that object, does it have a reality or a being, an existence that is separate from consciousness? What is its substance? What is the substance of these things? So in this verse, Hastamalaka is using these key words, vastu. All of these vastus are anusyutam, pervaded by that one, which is never touched by them. Anusyutam is a word that's used to show warp and woof. Vastu is a word that is used to show that there is in reality only one vastu. The only vastu that there is, the only thing that there is in reality is Brahman. And so he's used some key words here. So now we're going to just take a look at what is here. Is there anything here in this world of experience, like the rug, or each one of us in terms of our bodies, you know, or the plants, or the paintings, is there anything here that has any being apart from consciousness? Because it's obvious in the vritti, there's nothing that is apart from consciousness in the vritti. But then, is there anything apart from consciousness in these objects that I'm having a vritti of? Now, does everybody understand? So I've got an external vritti, I've got external objects here. You have to establish the way to go about this, so say somebody objects, say if I say there's nothing here but consciousness. And the person says, no, what are you talking about? There's all of these objects. And they say, you show me one object. You try to find one object. And here now, your mind, you have to apply your mind here. Because what's being said is simple, but true. You know, it's not rocket science. It's simple. It's simple, and they're so simple, but there's nothing you can do about the reality of it. And that is this. Everything that you say is an object is really only a name for a group of objects. It's a name for smaller names. It's a name for more names. In fact, in the whole Chandogya Upanishad, it goes through this so beautifully. This lamp is a name lamp, but it's a name for a conglomerate of other names, like pole and base and black paint and knob, right? And filament and light and plastic. Those are all names. This is one name for a bunch of names. And what do I say? I don't say this is one name for a bunch of things, because actually those things are not things either, right? So this is one name for a bunch of names of things which themselves are names for smaller names. See what I'm saying? So like, for instance, if I say this is a lamp, this is not really a lamp. It's a pole with a base, with a knob, with a light bulb, etc. In fact, I could probably come up with about 50 different things, 50 different names for all the components here. And then if I were to take one of the smaller components, which is called something like knob, right? This knob can be then dissected down into many smaller objects which have names, right? Swamiji, by the way, in the second, in the arshakulam.org on the homepage, in the second lecture or satsang that we had, he goes into this in great, great detail. So it's worth listening and following the transcript on this. But what it amounts to is this. In your experience, you are experiencing these objects. All of these objects are known. They all exist, right? But when you analyze them, these things that you call objects are not objects. They are names for a group of smaller objects, which themselves are names for groups of smaller objects. Now, you can say, well, so what? So what is that you can't find an object? There's no end to the division, you know, of objects into smaller objects into smaller objects. Now, what's important about this exercise is for you to go through it experientially. And experientially, what you recognize is, all right, this object is, and I am aware of it. Right? When I divide it into parts, now these objects are, and I am aware of them. You divide those into parts, these objects are, and I am aware of them. There is something here which is constant and changeless. In my experience of all of these things that I call objects, what I begin to recognize is that, in fact, there is no object here, but there is a common denominator which all of these objects enjoy. And that common denominator is that they always exist. And they are always known. So as I rip them apart or take them apart and dissect and dissect and dissect, there's one thing that remains constant and changeless and pervasive. Anusyutam remains constant and pervasive. It never changes at all. And that is the very being that these objects enjoy, the very consciousness that these objects enjoy. You can't get away from that. Now, this is the thing. This is the logical component here. You can't get away from the being that everything equally enjoys. You can't get away from the fact that they are known, and you can't find an object. It's not possible to find an object. And say you realize that any object, as long as it takes up space, is divisible. And eventually you need to get to the substance of the form, right? Any form is dependent for its being on its content. Well, eventually you have to take off the form. If you take off the form, what is going to be left? It's the very being which that object enjoys. And what is that being? It is being itself. And what is the experience of being itself? I am that experience. There is no other experience of being itself other than my being, the very being that is present to the vritti, that is pervasive to the vritti, the conscious being that pervades and is changelessly that nitya svarupa, that nitya upalabdhi svarupa, the me, my own presence, that is constantly present to every mood, every emotion, every thought, every perception. It is that being that is non-objectifiable that when I start saying, well, there must be something out here other than that, well, no, there isn't. There is nothing out here other than that. There is no out here. There is no out here. The body, the mind, the sense organs, all of these out heres, right, are all in me. All of the out heres, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the rug, the painting, the space, you, all of these out heres are not out here in reference to me. The conscious being is not in here or out here, or it's not to the right, it's not to the left, there's nothing else. You cannot remove being from anything. You can remove everything from being, but you can't remove being from anything. I say you can remove everything from being because everything removes itself. Everything. Within the creation, all of these samastavas do all of these things by the nature of being things that you perceive, that you experience. They're all changing all the time. They come into being, they go, this is another logic. Not only is everything here just a name for smaller things, there is nothing here that lasts. Everything is in constant flux. Comes into being, goes out of being. Just name one thing that doesn't. There isn't. And so that means absolutely every single experience, right, has no being of its own. But that doesn't bother us at all. It doesn't bother us because being itself is stable. And so even though these things are all coming into existence and going out of existence, being doesn't come into existence or go out of existence, and I am that being. So all of this change is taking place in absolute stability. But the stability is me, the non-objectifiable me. Right? That's not changing at all. Right? But all of this is changing all the time. But what it actually is not changing. Because when you try to find something here apart from being, there's nothing here to find. It's all infinitely divisible. It's all coming into being and going out of being. So there is nothing, there is no experience of being that's away from myself. So I am the conscious being, which is all of this. And now say you start to understand this when you go back just to be alert here to your experience, just the experience that you're having at this moment, you know, there is nothing away from you. If you go into the vritti, every part of the vritti, of the thought modification, you illumine. Okay? Then go out here. Is there anything out here that has a substance separate from consciousness? We can say, I want you to kind of understand there's a two-pronged thing, there's a jump you have to make here. In terms of your experiences, whether it be an emotion, feelings, perceptions, sensations of the physical body, right, all of them are illumined. They're known. I'm aware of them. Consciousness illumines them. I am their being. Right? I am the conscious being, and all of these thought modifications take place in me, and they come and go. So I should be able to just sit and recognize the reality of that. But then we look out here, well, what about all of these things? Are these things different from me? Do they have, does this creation have any being, any substance apart from me? To say yes, you have to find an object here. And you can't. Right? You can't find an object or any substance. And yet, all of these things that pose as objects, when you analyze them, have absolute substance. There is nothing away from being. They all have being. But do they have their own being? Do they have independent being? So this is a real object apart from me. This is a real object apart from me. That is a real object apart from me. Do they have that kind of being? Or is there one being which all of this enjoys? And that's what you need to see. The way to see it is to try to figure out, see if your mind can establish an object here. And there's two things that are going to make it impossible. One is that any vastu is infinitely divisible. And the only thing that remains constant is being itself, that it's that it's in your awareness, and that it is that it has being, and it's in your awareness. The being and the awareness remain constant. It doesn't. It's destroyed. It's gone forever every time you divide it. Okay? That's one thing. The other thing is that everything in this creation is subject to change. And as the instant something changes, it's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. Right? We don't tend to understand that, the reality of that, because being goes on existing. So you don't realize that when something has changed, that thing that has just changed isn't there anymore. It's absolutely not there anymore. You know? It doesn't bother us because being is there, right? The truth of the whole thing is there. So we don't see any, we don't notice any disruption. So now look at this moment here. This is very kind of an interesting meditation. You just think of this moment here that you're experiencing. And in this moment is changing, right? Say if I just cut it right down the middle to try to catch a moment, right? What has happened to the past moment? It's not, it's gone. Right? Whatever was going on in the past moment is no more. What about in the future moment? It's not here yet, right? It's not here yet. Right? And so, how to find in this creation this present moment? That's very tricky. This present moment where something is actually here. It's actually impossible to do. We don't worry about that because we are the presence that blesses all moments. So we're never away from the present because we are the presence. But for me to actually find a present moment here is impossible because I would have to stop time. Our time is linear, right? Change is, time is linear, change is linear. You'd have to be able to stop the time to find a moment which is timeless. If you don't find a timeless moment, then change is taking place. So all you do is you get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller moments, but that moment, as long as it takes up time, is still divisible. And so you can't even find a moment here. It's impossible. That doesn't bother us. However, if you can't find a moment here, and the past isn't here and the future hasn't come, and you can't find the moment, you can't find anything here then that has any being. That doesn't bother us at all because I am the being. Consciousness is the being. I am the presence. I supply the present. Right? And I am never away from the present. You never have an experience away from the present. Right? Any memory of the past is the present. Projection into the future is the present. You can't wiggle out of the present. Right? All memories are the present. And if vrittis come in, you have one thought after another, those are coming and going, but you're always in the present, illumining whatever is there. Yeah. And so what has to happen in order to really understand myself, who I am, I have to be able to differentiate the conscious being that I am, right? Not just from the vritti, as I illumine all these vrittis, not just from the vritti, but from all of these objects which I objectify. You see the difference? I need to see myself as pervasive to the vritti, and I can easily see how the vritti goes on changing, 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 and I remain the same. But then I also have to see that this conscious being that I am, is not separate from these objects. And in fact, in your experience, which you can only have in reference to the vritti, you never experience anything away from consciousness. But then the question in your mind, the logical question will be, I never experience anything away from consciousness. I never change. I illumine all thoughts. But how do I know that I'm not just a little pocket of consciousness here away from this? Now we have to work on the nature of the creation to show that there is no this out here. That the this, these vastus, all of these objects, are really only my being. It's like the wave ocean example can be useful here. You know, just like there's the ocean with many, many waves, is really only one water. All of these names and forms, infinitely divisible, just names for smaller names, for smaller names, for smaller names. All of these forms, there's no experience of them away from existence, away from being. And I am that being, you know. So that's when I understand that I can say, I am the whole. It's not that this body is the whole, or the mind is the whole, or the sense organs are the whole, or the ahankara is the whole. That's all part of the whole. But the body, mind, sense organs are all part of this creation. If I say, I am the whole, that means I am the conscious being, which is the very consciousness being, which is the substance of this whole creation. That's how I am the whole. It's like the wave saying, you know, I am the whole, I am the ocean. It's that I'm only water. I am the water. Right? I am the consciousness. Right? And I recognize that that consciousness is not away from anything. When you can understand that there's no object here in reality because it's everything's infinitely divisible and subject to time, then you can sit. If you understand that, then sit with your experience, you and your vritti, consciousness and the thought modification. Is there anything there but consciousness? And does the consciousness change? You have to say no. There's nothing. You can say the vritti is there. The vritti goes on changing and changing and changing. Does the consciousness, the being that the vritti enjoys, the conscious being that you are, change? Absolutely not. You can't make it change. There's nothing you can do about it. I say, does it change? And you say yes. I'll say, no, it doesn't. Come on, let's try it again. It doesn't. Consciousness can't change. Being can't change. So we need to do that differentiation. You know, to see that. It's something to be seen, to be recognized. And then the question is, how does this changeless consciousness, which I am, relate to all of this seemingly external world? Is there any differentiation? We say no. In reality, this is only consciousness. So, one more verse. Let's just take a minute. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Figure out how this thing works. Okay.
Well, I have a kind of more of an observation and a question, which is just that tonight, this is the first time I saw that this whole Advaita philosophy is not a form of idealism. You know, in some way, I think I always felt that it was dependent on things that the vrittis are just consciousness, and it's only dealing in the sort of first-person realm of experience. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But based on this unfoldment, then I can see that it isn't dependent purely on seeing that the vrittis are only consciousness, but that the actual objects to which the vrittis refer are also only consciousness. So it's operative not merely in the first-person realm, but actually in the sort of second- and third-person realms.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's great.
Yeah. Starting to become more clear, at least this area that we're in now, and how you can say I am the whole, because really the subject and the object, the subject-object relationship are both exist within Maya, the body, mind, sense organs, you know, the thoughts and perceptions, all of these things that we consider the subject are also object. So the subject-object relationship and all within all duality are illumined by consciousness. Right. So I am the subject and I am the object. All are nothing, have nothing but consciousness for their being.
This seems like a progression, you know? It seems like a build-up.
It is. It's a logical...
Yeah.
Step by step, because
yeah.
you need
because
to go.
What happened to Ishwara? You know what I mean? And I'm going off as Ishwara.
I just didn't take it that far to Ishwara, but actually, when you recognize that you are the whole, then we're bringing Ishwara from there. At this point, I was only looking.
You know, I got it. Yeah. I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
But I just went like, this is just fantastic. At one moment there's Ishwara, and the next moment it's like just pure awareness.
Yeah.
You can't even name it.
In the end, you have to be able to say, I am Ishwara. Mm. You know, because just like you can say, I am the whole, you can't say that from a point of identification with the body, mind, sense organs. You can say, I am the whole, from the point of identification as yourself as consciousness, which is who you are.
Yeah.
That's what you are,
is
really.
Is that a dangerous statement to make in this world?
Well, you shouldn't walk around saying it.
Yeah. It's Catholic Church, you know,
no,
stuff like that.
No, but what I mean
is
that,
you know?
But it's something that you teach or you discuss in satsang. It's not something.
Coffee chatting.
No. It's not table talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. It's not. Lisa?
So, form is infinitely divisible. So, there's never a point where form stops being form.
Well, that's true. As there's a relationship, though. Form exists within Maya. Okay? So form exists within duality. But if you think of form... You use the standard example of clay pot. There's a relationship between form and its substance, right? But now the form, for its reality, for its being, is dependent on the substance. So if we use as an example clay pot, just to show that dependent relationship, Form has no being apart from its substance. But if you take the clay out, there's no form. So now, say if you understand that as the primary relationship where form is dependent upon its substance for its being, it has a dependent being, a dependent reality. It has no reality of its own. So now when we analyze the creation in terms of all of these forms, or what we call names, name and form, okay? You analyze the creation. That is always going to hold true. No matter what the form is, it's going to be dependent for its reality totally on the substance. If you pull a substance away, there's no form. Now, because of we are limited by our sense perception, all we can do is see, we can't see existence. We are existence. We can't see it through sense organs. But we can see form, right? But the thing is, as long as form is there, as long as it takes up space, then we can see it, right? But as long as it takes up space, it's divisible. You can't get to, a form that doesn't take up space, it's not a form anymore. And so what you have to do is say, as long as it takes up space, a form takes up space, it's divisible, so it's infinitely divisible until it doesn't take up space, and then it doesn't exist as a form. So say you get to this hypothetical smallest form, then let's just take off this, you're going to eventually have to just, in your mind, take off the form, and what is going to be left inside if you don't say smaller forms. Right? Like here, this is a lamp. This lamp is made of smaller forms. Say you get down to molecules and atoms and quarks, you know, to the smallest imaginable thing. You're still in the same, you might as well be at the lamp size. Even if you're at a quark, if you're still in space, if you're still in form, you know, you're eventually going to have to get down to that substance. But the substance can't be a form. Right? Because form is dependent on substance for its being. So what is going to be left? That's going to be the being, the substance that's not objectifiable, which is only your own being. So that's a logical progression there.
So are you saying that form is consciousness or form is dependent on consciousness?
I'm saying, you know why it is consciousness? Because that's like saying this. Let's go back to clay pot. Is there a pot and clay? Yes and no. In terms of what is actually there, there's only clay, right? But the pot is there useful. But in terms of reality, in terms of substance, right, there's only clay. So here, yes, there's this creation. We experience it through our sense organs, and it has an objectifiable and empirical reality that we can function in and do things with and analyze and all of that. But say now we want to say, well, what is it? What is the substance of this? Then we'll say the substance of it is consciousness. The truth of it is consciousness in terms of substance. Like saying, here's this clay pot. It's very useful in everything. You can do lots of things with it. But, you know, what it really is clay. And so here, what really is this? If you were to analyze the whole thing, in science we do it and nobody has a problem with it, you know. You say, you know, we all are fine with the fact that there's really just a bunch of atoms and energy and electricity moving around crazily here. But we're not functioning on that level, right? We're functioning on this level.
If someone were to say, if someone was trying to talk about advice and they were to say that creation is unreal, don't you think, first of all, I know they'd have to say, what do you mean by unreal? But I think there would be an objection in that, because even though the creation as it appears, it may not be as it appears to be, but there is a reality to it. Not just the levels of reality, but there's also the reality that it's actually Brahman. But would that be incorrect?
No. This word, I think, unreal and illusory, all of these words come from a translation of the word maya, apparent, illusory, magical, you know, ephemeral, all of these. So
bad translation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what has to be recognized is what is actually meant by Maya, you know, and what is the order, what is the order of reality of Maya, and that's where the word mithya comes in. And mithya, Swamiji himself used to translate that as apparent, and then define what it meant. He doesn't even do that anymore. He defines it straight out as dependent reality, right? Which, like the pot, has no being of its own. It's dependent for its being. Dependent reality or dependent being. It's dependent for its reality on something else. You know?
I think that mithya is a really hard thing for some people who think they understand it right to understand. I think they would rather just dismiss this altogether rather than tackle mithya.
Well, you know what? I think that that's not true when it's being taught.
Yeah.
But it's usually not taught.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually just not taught. It's just, this is all apparent or illusory. And then what these words actually mean, I mean, one of them, kind of the extraordinarily amazing, I don't even know what words to use from my own experience of it, of Vedanta is that it will endlessly explain exactly what it means. You know, right? If you're using a word, that word means something that you need to understand exactly what it means, and it will go on and on and on like that, explaining.
So conceptually, what is the relationship between Maya and Mithya?
Yeah, Maya is looked at the creative power, or that which is responsible for the projection of this creation. But the order of reality that it is called mithya. So like, for instance, Brahman, which is just pure infinite consciousness, being, Satchitananda. The order of reality for Brahman is what we call paramarthika satyam, absolute reality. And so the definition of absolute reality is that which exists in all three periods of time, or negatively put, that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. That's the definition of paramarthika satyam, that which is absolutely exists. And the only thing that is that is Brahman. Maya, or the whole empirical creation, everything that exists within time and space. Those are the empirical creation and also the subjective creation, like the a snake on a rope. That's subjective, right? Or my dream, that's subjective. So the empirical creation, where there's a shared reality, shared order, and the subjective creation, all that exists within name and form, has for its material cause Maya, as in terms of that's what is responsible for, not material cause exactly, but what responsible for that projection. That order of reality is mithya. And mithya is actually defined as satasad bhyam nirvachaniya. Sat is real, asat unreal. Anirvachaniya, that which cannot be described or explained as being absolutely real, paramarthika satyam, nor as asat, non-existent. Like, the word for non-existent is tucham. That's another order of reality. And that would mean something that's void, it's not there. Like the example, son of a barren woman or a horn of a rabbit.
I interviewed some talking about Nitya, and he says that at one point he says, it's not a category or something. He says that. Like, it doesn't have equal status to Brahman. You can't say there's Brahman and there's Mithya. You can't make them two categories.
It's like not a category. It's an order of reality.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you want to, yeah, it's not a thing. Yeah, because there's only Advaita, so there's no thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, to make the, when we were going back to making the jump between, you know, saying I am consciousness, first person, like you were saying, and then going to second and third person and saying, you know, all of this is me.
I am the whole. Yeah.
I am the whole. When the one that says I am consciousness, it's not consciousness saying it, it's my mind who's saying it, and it's pointing towards consciousness.
That's right.
However, I as an upadhi can say that, you know, because I have this upadhi, so my mind can say that. However, for me as this person to say I am the whole, who is the one who's going to say that? That
It's the same, because when your mind says, I am consciousness, those words are lakshana, right? They are pointing, the mind is not saying, I, the mind, am consciousness.
Right.
It's
right.
saying, I, the self,
right.
which illumines the mind, am consciousness.
Right.
Now that same mind says, I, the self that illumines the mind, is the self which is the being of all beings. So I, in fact, am the whole.
It's still only Ishwar's body here.
No. Because no, listen. If you say, using lakshana, I am consciousness. Okay. Is anything in this world away from that consciousness? You're not saying I am sarvajnaha.
Mm-hmm.
I am. You're not identifying with the whole upadhi. You're recognizing yourself as consciousness. Now the question is there anything that is not that consciousness?
No, that's true, but there is a very different experiential recognition that the mind has of, you know, the mind is a thinking object. And so the mind is thinking, and the mind can say, oh, I can differentiate myself. I can be a sakshi, I can differentiate myself. I can actually figure out that I am, you know, I'm changing, and I can differentiate myself.
Uh-huh.
But who is the one who is, and I understand the logic of consciousness being the substrate of everything, of the universe.
No, but they say it like this, then you understand that you are the substrate of everything. You say that you understand that consciousness, you are consciousness. If your mind can say, I am the consciousness that illuminates.
I'm saying, no, I do understand that, but the experiential reality of that I have for my body is never going to be the, as long as I'm alive, you know, it's never going to be the same.
Well, actually, that isn't true. That isn't true. I'll show you what, there are certain areas that it is true. Like, for instance, your sense of touch pervades this body and it doesn't go outside here. So there's going to be a more of an intimacy with your physical body. However, with your eyes, there's no distance, there's no more distance between consciousness in the wall and consciousness in the body. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so what you start, once you get rid of the Dehatma Buddhi, you know, the Dehatma Buddhi is the notion, the Buddhi, that conviction, that the Atma, the self, is the Deha, is the body. That's a very, very strong notion. That's, you know, but once that is broken, and I was giving you like a little exercise at the beginning of class to let not only these sense objects external to the sense, to the body, realize that they are known, but also the body is known. And so that means that the body, the mind, sense organs get thrown into the thought modification, and that helps you to recognize that your consciousness is not attached, really, to anything. And another way is to do it, these are just exercises, may or may not work for you. If you just think of me, just the word me, your own being, and then, you know, put it in the middle of the room and just let it extend throughout the room. To help you break through. Just as an exercise. If that doesn't work, forget it. But if it does, you can just, you know, kind of imagine your own sense of self, me. Put it in the middle of the room and let it just fill the room. And you do that as an imagination, but you know what? It is a reality. It's not an imagination. It's a reality. You have to see that. Yeah.
But I think it is hard to make that jump between knowing that your awareness illumines your mind is cognizing the object. So, yes, all that's in your awareness, but to make the jump that somehow that the awareness it extends beyond the mind, or that it's not...
Yes, that's why have been spending some time on analyzing the nature of these objects.
Yeah.
You have to analyze the nature of these objects that you're experiencing, that you're giving a reality to.
It's, even though one can logically do that, it's hard for me to understand that can actually be known as one's reality.
Why? That you logically do it, but you're doing it within your experience. It's even though we're breaking this down, like say if I take any object and I break it down into parts, While I'm doing that, I am experiencing the fact that these objects are disappearing before my very eyes, you know, into smaller objects. I'm experiencing that. And I'm also experiencing that the existence, the being, does not change at all. And I'm differentiating that.
Yes, but what you're using to do that is your mind.
That's, it doesn't, any of that that's absolutely true. But we can only deal with the reality that we experience in this creation. And you experience a difference between your body and this object.
Right.
You experience a difference between the mind, what you consider internal, and what you consider external.
Right. And that I think that's the core point, though, because to do any of this analysis, because you are using your mind, and none of this is outside the mind, because you're using your mind, there is something inherently about this body that one is using in order to talk about...
That's true, but you can do the same analysis on this upadhi that you're using. Like, for instance, this body itself.
And that, it seems like that is easier.
Okay, but you can do it on the mind, but you can also do it on the physical body then. And if that's easier, then we can do that. We can take it apart and get down to one finger or, you know, as many fingers, and still this object is infinitely divisible.
Right.
It's a name for many forms.
Right, I was saying it's easier to do it on the body, mind, you know, saying your body, mind is one, as opposed to you're still using your mind to analyze the universe.
But Kiki, this is an important point. If you're gaining knowledge, you have to be gaining knowledge of your reality. The reality that you experience is this universe that you experience through your sense organs, right? So this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we have. And so the Upanishads come in and give you knowledge, or this teaching methodology, or even external, regular means of knowledge, are knowledge of this reality that you experience. So now what if you say, I'm only getting knowledge of the reality I experience. Maybe there's a knowledge, maybe there's a reality that I don't experience. However, even if you say there's a reality that I don't experience, that's going to be true because it's an infinite creation. But does that reality that you don't experience or know anything about, does it exist within duality? Does it exist within time and space? Some reality you know nothing about. Does it still exist within duality? If you say no, then it's non-dual. Then you are that. If you say yes, then by the mere fact that it exists within duality, it's going to enjoy the same characteristics as this universe that exists within duality in terms of its essential being. You know, so we have to say, okay, here it is. Here's this reality that we're dealing with, and analyze it. And let the Vedanta... Let the Upanishad do its job.